This is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, April 21, 2005. From KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado. The House of Representatives is ready to pass a bill based on Dick Cheney's questionable 2001 Energy Task Force. Nicaragua Sandinista Party is organizing to stop the Dominican Republic Central American Free Trade Agreement. And victims' rights groups denounce possible legislation they say protects asbestos manufacturers.
I remember waking up to my wife crying and saying, "You've got cancer."
These stories and more after these headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Brazil has offered asylum to ousted Ecuadorian President Lúcio Gutiérrez. After days of street protests, the parliament voted the leader out of office. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is calling for immediate elections in Ecuador. However, the constitutional process escalates Vice President Alfredo Palacio to the position. Palacio, 66 years old and a cardiologist by training, became known as a prominent critic of the former president and his economic policies. Counter-demonstrations broke out soon after his swearing-in, with protesters calling for the parliament to be dissolved. Palacio said he would consider an early election, but dismissed the possibility of disbanding the parliament. Two controversial judicial nominations on Capitol Hill have passed through the Judiciary Committee, setting the stage for the so-called nuclear option by Senate Republicans. Brian Zinn reports from D.C.
Two controversial nominees, Priscilla R. Owens of the Texas Supreme Court and Janice Rogers Brown of the California Supreme Court, passed through the Senate Judiciary Committee along party lines. Both nominees were filibustered by Democrats in President George W. Bush's first term. Democratic leaders say that these nominees are too conservative. Brown was quoted in saying that where government moves in, communities retreat, civil society disintegrates, and the ability to control our destiny atrophies. Owens is known for dissenting opinions on a Texas law that allows a minor to receive an abortion without notifying her parents if she can show the court that she is mature enough to understand the consequences. Senate Republicans are trying to muster support to stop the filibuster on judicial nominees in what is being called the nuclear option. Democrats threaten to shut down the Senate if Republicans are successful. Arlen Specter, chair of the Judiciary Committee, pleaded with the senators to avoid tainting the congressional process.
If we fail, then I fear this Senate will descend the staircase of political gamesmanship and division. But if we succeed, our Senate will regain its place as the world's preeminent deliberative body.
Republicans charged the Democrats with being obstructionist. Out of the 215 judicial nominees brought before the full Senate for a vote, 205 have been confirmed. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Brian Zinn.
The Texas state legislature moved forward on a bill that would prevent gays and lesbians from becoming foster parents in the future and retroactively. From KPFT in Houston, Renee Feltz explains.
The measure passed as an amendment to a bill overhauling the state's troubled child protective services program. It requires CPS to ask potential foster care parents if they're homosexual. If an applicant answers yes, then he or she is immediately disqualified from consideration. Foster children already placed in same-sex couple homes would be removed. Conservative Texas lawmaker Robert Talton, a Republican for suburban Houston, has tried before to pass the measure and finally found success by attaching it to the CPS reform bill. Lesbian Gay Rights Lobby of Texas spokesman Chuck Smith says the amendment fails to help the financially strapped CPS system.
Any attempts here to remove candidates that can provide loving, stable environments for children that otherwise wouldn't have a home, and to try and remove candidates based on hate and prejudice is totally inexcusable.
Critics of the measure note many foster care children have special needs, which make them harder to place with any family. The CPS bill is now in a joint conference committee. I'm Renee Feltz for Free Speech Radio News.
Anticipating the Israeli government's withdrawal from Gaza, Palestinians are making plans for the use of settlement buildings soon to be abandoned. Manar Jabreen reports from the Independent Middle East Media Center.
The Palestinian Authority is ready for the Gaza pullout more than Israel. A Palestinian Authority technical committee prepared a list of structures now in Gaza settlements believed to be helpful for the development of the economy of the Gaza Strip if remained intact. Saleh Naami, a political analyst from Gaza specialized in settlements issues, said there is still debate whether current settlements should be torn down or remain for re-occupation by Palestinians.
Palestinian Minister of Housing said the Palestinian Authority demands the destruction of the settlers' houses because they are built as villas, which does not fit the highly dense population in the Gaza Strip. Yet there are voices in the Palestinian Authority advocating keeping some of these houses intact.
Meanwhile, Palestinian legislators approved Wednesday the election bill without modifications. The approval of the bill would enable the election committee to hold elections on July 17 as originally set. For Free Speech Radio News from the International Middle East Media Center, IMEMC.org, in Palestine, this is Manar Jibrin.
Chilean and Venezuelan officials sign an oil deal that advances one nation's candidate to be the likely head of the Organization of American States. Jorge Garatón reports from Santiago.
Chilean President Ricardo Lagos is traveling the region, seeking support for his Minister of Interior, José Miguel Insulza, to become the next head of the OAS, the Organization of American States, the OAS, which has become an irrelevant regional body, worrying Chile and other South American nations who want an active multilateral organization responding to regional needs. Chile has the support of all important countries in South America, including the Caribbean. President Lagos has met with Brazil's President Lula da Silva and with Venezuela's Hugo Chavez to ensure the South American axis keeps its votes. During his meeting with Chavez, Lagos signed a series of agreements, including an energy deal. Both leaders agreed energy resources becomes the lever for regional integration, much like coal was for the European Union. For the upcoming May 2nd vote, Brazil and Venezuela are heavily lobbying for Chile's Insulza, particularly in the Volrich Caribbean region. For FSRN, this is Jorge Garretón in Santiago.
And I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
The House of Representatives is poised to pass an almost $400 billion bill to overhaul U.S. energy policy. The measure would further deregulate the energy industry and add over $20 billion in incentives for oil and gas companies for the next 10 years. The energy bill is a product of Vice President Dick Cheney's 2001 Energy Task Force. The administration has refused to make task force documents public, but it has been indicated that one participant was former Enron executive Ken Lay. Mitch Jezrich has more from the Capitol.
The energy bill, expected to be passed by the House sometime Thursday night, would exempt manufacturers of the gasoline additive MTBE, a known carcinogen that has found its way into drinking water systems in 29 states, from having to clean it up.
Tom DeLay is located in a district which just happens to contain the people who bring you the MTBE product.
Betsy Loyalist with the League of Conservation Voters calls the energy bill the Tom DeLay MTBE bill. Two manufacturers of MTBE, Valero and Lyondell, are located in the Republican leader's district, and Loyalist says DeLay does everything he can to protect them.
The cleanup costs run in the hundreds of billions of dollars, and cities and states will be saddled with that. So Tom DeLay really is the spokespersons for these industries that want liability waivers for their product, even though that product is causing damage to men, women, and children's health, even though that product will have to be cleaned up and taxpayers will bear that expense.
The energy bill would also take steps in voiding local and state environmental laws that limit where oil companies can build liquefied gas facilities and oil refineries.
This is the best energy bill that money can buy. These guys, we're talking ExxonMobil, we're talking Home Depot, Halliburton, many other companies, have invested heavily in congressional campaigns.
In the last two election cycles, the gas and oil industry have made close to $50 million in campaign contributions, 80% of it going to Republicans. Anna Rio is with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group.
Out of $8 billion in new tax breaks to the energy industry, 95% of it would go to the status quo, would go to polluting energy sources, so oil, coal, nuclear, and gas. Only 5% would go to energy efficiency and renewables. So these guys make out like bandits, and in the meantime, they're getting a host of other provisions.
At a local Exxon gas station near the Capitol, House Speaker Dennis Hastert marked the pending victory on the energy bill by holding a press conference there.
Focused about gas prices, gas prices.
Several other Republican lawmakers joined Hastert at the Exxon gas station. Free Speech Radio News asked Representative Tom Tiert of Kansas, whose top career campaign contributors come from the oil and gas industry, as to why equate the energy bill with gas prices, when even George Bush indicated the day before that the bill would not bring the prices down.
Well, a lot of people are looking for an immediate solution to $2.50 gasoline, and the ship of state moves very slowly. Getting this policy in place is something that's long overdue. If we get it in place this month, it's still going to take 6 months for things to start, affecting it. One of the things we haven't done in America is build an oil refinery since 1979. Over half of them have been closed down since 1981. There's provisions in here through the regulatory process to allow additional refineries.
And according to the bill, those refineries will be put right into poor communities by fast-tracking the development of refineries in areas that have a 10% unemployment rate higher than the national average. Maria Widner is with Earth Justice.
It sets a different standard, basically, for protection under the protection and process under the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, other environmental and public health federal laws for poorer communities. It targets impoverished areas with high unemployment, recent massive layoffs, and says, okay, we're gonna streamline, we're gonna fast track refinery expansions and sitings for you all.
The bill still has to go to the Senate, where it has been blocked for the past 4 years by a filibuster. However, with an increased Republican majority, supporters are confident that this will be the year that the bill makes it to George Bush's desk. Mitch Jezerich, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
Brother Cornell West, I'm just hoping and praying that you have the good enough sense to always tune in to Free Speech Radio News. Lays bare the truth and inspires you to fight for justice. Free Speech Radio News.
Press was denied access today to the U.S. Court of Appeals in oral arguments in the case involving former FBI employee Sybil Edmonds and the Department of Justice. Edmonds was fired by the FBI in 2002 after she exposed problems inside the spy agency leading up to the 9/11 attacks, including shoddy translation work and employees with questionable alliances. Dolores Embernal has more.
A court order closing the doors to the media was issued to journalists in the case of FBI whistleblower Sybil Edmonds, who is pleading before the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals to have her case reinstated. The government's secrecy around this case has angered not only groups like the ACLU, but also major news organizations, who yesterday filed an emergency motion to have the judge open the oral arguments to everyone.
I'm standing in front of a courthouse where a travesty of justice is taking place.
Daniel Ellsberg, who in 1969 blew the whistle on the Pentagon's cover-up that the war in Vietnam will not be won, was outraged at the judge's actions to even exclude Edmonds herself from the courtroom.
This administration is pretending that what Sybil Edmonds has to say is so explosive and radioactive and affects national security so much that no one can be trusted to hear it in that courtroom.
During her time in the FBI, Edmonds worked as a language specialist, but shortly after 9/11, she was fired after repeatedly reporting serious security breaches and misconduct. She challenged her retaliatory dismissal by filing a lawsuit in federal court, but her case was dismissed last July when then-Attorney General John Ashcroft invoked the so-called state secrets privilege. Sybil Edmonds is speaking to reporters.
When the Attorney General came initially and invoked the state secret privilege, he cited two reasons: to protect certain sensitive diplomatic relations and to protect certain foreign business relations of the United States. They are saying that whole information, everything, is classified. We don't know what diplomatic relations they are referring to.
Well, there's a long history of government closing down courtrooms, closing down hearings, closing down documents from the public to protect embarrassment.
Rick Bloom is with the watchdog group OpenTheGovernment.org. He believes that government is giving people like Edmonds the runaround because they're protecting themselves.
You've got bureaucrats who don't want to tell us that they messed up. They don't want to tell us that, yes, there were problems with the linguistics office, as Sybil Edmonds alleges. And they don't want to tell the public that they did something wrong. And that's wrong. We need to know what were the mistakes so that we can make the right fixes and get to the problems before the terrorists do. And we can get to the problems so that we can make our democracy stronger. And again, so that we can make the public safer.
John Ashcroft classified all documents on the Sybil Edmonds case, including briefings that were given to members of Congress, as well as testimony from the FBI acknowledging that many of her allegations were true. Again, Daniel Ellsberg.
The Attorney General, in claiming that her case involved secrets that would endanger national security, was lying. And if it turns out that claim of national security was falsely invoked, then Ashcroft himself, and perhaps now his successor, Gonzalez, would face charges of obstruction of justice.
Today, the court only met with Edmonds' lawyers for 5 minutes, and the rest of the time with lawyers from the Department of Justice. Edmonds and her team will wait for a court's decision in the next few days. Dolores Bernal, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
A commercial helicopter was shot down Thursday north of Baghdad, killing all 9 passengers on board. Robert Callahan is a spokesman for the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad.
The helicopter went down at 1:45 local time, about 20 kilometers north of Baghdad. The nine dead on the helicopter were 3 Bulgarians who were the crew members and 6 Americans, all of whom worked for Blackwater. It is presumed that it was brought down by hostile fire. We won't know that until we do a full investigation, however.
The helicopter was contracted by the U.S. Defense Department. Meanwhile, family members of over 50 people who were killed and dumped into the Tigris River are attempting to identify their relatives and photographs at a local police station. Sunni insurgents have kidnapped as many as 100 Shia in the last few weeks. It's believed the bodies found in the Tigris are some of those who have been abducted. Iraqi President Jalal Talabani.
They were killed and they threw the body to the Tigris, and more than 50 bodies have been brought out from the Tigris. We have the full name of those who were killed and those criminals who committed these crimes. And Mr. Prime Minister, Dr. Alawi, is going to deal with it.
In a week of increasing violence in the region, al-Qaeda claimed responsibility for a suicide bombing Thursday aimed at interim Prime Minister Iyad Alawi, although Alawi was not harmed. For archives of this or other newscasts or documentaries, visit our website, www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. This week, Republican Senator Arlen Specter introduced new legislation that would create a no-fault trust fund to settle asbestos claims. Many consider asbestos the country's largest occupational health crisis. Over 40 million U.S. workers have been exposed to it, and related diseases are claiming up to 10,000 lives per year. Under Specter's bill, the companies that manufactured or used asbestos, along with their insurers, would pay into a $140 billion trust fund to settle claims. In return, they would become immune to the lawsuits that have bankrupted over 70 companies. But victims' rights groups say the plan would unfairly cap payments, delay compensation, and limit eligibility. Brian Edwards-Tiekert has more.
On Paul Ziegelbaum's wrist, there's a blue plastic bracelet that says Asbestos Awareness. The only time he takes it off is when he visits his mother, who doesn't know that Paul has mesothelioma, a fatal cancer whose only known cause is exposure to asbestos. When he got diagnosed last year, the doctor told Paul to find an attorney and a medical specialist, in that order.
I remember waking up to my wife crying and saying, you've got cancer. And I just said to her, well, we'll deal with it.
Paul got an attorney and brought a lawsuit against 40 companies ranging from the power utilities he worked for to the manufacturers of the asbestos he worked with. He also found a medical specialist and got $300,000 worth of surgery and chemotherapy. He thinks it's bought him a few years.
The longest that I've seen, the longest that I've heard someone surviving is at 9 years, 8 or 9 years. The way I do this is I plan for 5 years.
What Paul wants to do with those 5 years is stop working and travel with his wife, recreating the retirement years he won't live long enough to enjoy. When he settles his lawsuits, he thinks they'll have the money to do it. But according to Bill Walker of the Environmental Working Group, legislation pending on Capitol Hill right now would derail those plans.
The bill that Senator Spector is pushing in Congress right now would freeze all claims, throw out all current claims, and say that nobody could go back into court for at least 9 months while they're waiting for this trust fund to be set up.
When the $140 billion trust fund is set up, Paul's problems don't stop. His workers' comp case will be thrown out, so he doesn't have a chance at winning permanent health care coverage. The cap on settlements for his condition is lower than what he's already won from the 9 cases he settled in court, so he wouldn't actually see any more money.
It makes me feel like I've been robbed, and then I've been robbed again.
And even if he could get more money, bureaucratic delays could keep him from getting his hands on it before he dies. Linda Reinstein works with the Asbestos Disease Awareness Organization.
You've got compensation delays that are going to be enormous. So the average person will wait anywhere from 5 to 8 years to receive compensation from the National Trust Fund.
Reinstein says there are also eligibility problems. The bill sets strict medical criteria that would make it very difficult for certain types of victims, like people who used to smoke, to make claims. And the bill caps attorney's fees at 5%, a level Reinstein says is too low to make it worth a lawyer's while. Without the help of attorneys, she says, many victims won't be able to document how their illness is connected to asbestos exposures. She sees a simple explanation for the bill's shortcomings. People like Paul haven't been part of the negotiations.
None of the victims' groups have participated in these discussions at a stakeholder level.
The groups that have participated are manufacturers, insurance companies, labor unions, and trial lawyers. Reinstein calls the result a bailout for industry, which needs to cap its exposure to lawsuits. Senator Arlen Specter's office didn't respond to requests to comment for this story, and the National Association of Manufacturers, the principal industry group that's been pushing for asbestos legislation, won't comment either. All supporters of the bill, however, say they're looking for a way to help asbestos victims get fair compensation without bankrupting more businesses. The Environmental Working Group's Bill Walker says the bankruptcy issue is a smokescreen.
The companies have very carefully nurtured and created this false notion that paying compensation to asbestos victims is driving them bankrupt. It may be more a flaw in the bankruptcy laws than anything else that allows companies like Johns Manville or other people who W.R. Grace, who manufactured asbestos, to sort of isolate their asbestos operations under Chapter 11 so that they are not liable, so that they're bankrupt while they go on making millions of dollars in profits from the rest of their companies.
For Linda Reinstein, there's a more fundamental problem. Asbestos is still in use. She'd like to see Congress ban it before it even discusses limiting liability for using it.
The simple truth is asbestos kills, and it's responsible for the largest man-made disaster in history, but still hasn't been banned.
The asbestos bill faces hearings in the Senate Judiciary Committee next Tuesday and its first vote on Thursday. It enjoys bipartisan support, but also faces opposition within both parties. A significant Republican bloc thinks it's too generous. In Berkeley, I'm Brian Edwards-Tiegert for Free Speech Radio News.
Nicaragua's capital city of Managua is in the middle of a transportation crisis. Despite mass actions from student groups, the government approved a bus fare increase, although most bus operators are refusing to drive for fear of being the target of student unrest over the fare hike. This past week, activists have commandeered and destroyed buses, blocked major roads, and exploded homemade bombs throughout Managua in opposition to the increase. Local residents are crowding pickup trucks to maneuver through the city. It is unclear when normal bus service will resume. Meanwhile, the Sandinista Party in Nicaragua is doing everything it can to postpone the ratification of the Dominican Republic Central American Free Trade Agreement, or DR-CAFTA. Nan McCurdy has more from Managua.
After consulting widely with broad sectors of Nicaraguan society, the Sandinista Party is against ratifying the Free Trade Agreement in its current form. Sandinista deputy and member of the Special Commission on CAFTA, Alba Palacios, explains why.
Primero, porque se pone en riesgo los productos sensibles de Nicaragua.
First, because it puts Nicaragua's sensitive products at risk. There's an enormous quantity of North American subsidized products coming, which will do away with our economic productivity, especially in the rural areas. Secondly, the employment that it will generate will exploit our workforce without guarantees of protection of our labor laws and without guarantees of protection for our environment.
The Sandinista deputies are working with other Central American representatives to lobby the U.S. Congress against ratification, saying the free trade agreement will aggravate already existing poverty and increase emigration from Nicaragua to Costa Rica and the United States. In the Nicaraguan National Assembly, the Sandinistas are a minority in the Special Commission on Free Trade. But for now, two deputies from other parties are also against sending the agreement to the plenary for ratification. Deputy Alba Palacios describes other influences on the Nicaraguan representatives.
Pues la movilización de los estudiantes, de los
student protests, farmers' protests, peasant protests, artisan protests, and protests by Nicaraguan workers are very important in their effect on the other party's deputies. Hopefully, there won't be enough votes for ratification.
The Nicaraguan Minister of Commerce, Azucena Castillo, explains why the government wants CAFTA.
Bueno, para Nicaragua significa la única alternativa.
For Nicaragua, it's the only alternative for the creation of thousands of jobs, especially in the cities and also in the countryside, where you find the highest level of poverty.
Donde se entroniza los mayores niveles de pobreza.
The U.S. hoped to ratify CAFTA throughout Central America in order to pressure Congress to approve the agreement. El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras have ratified. Nicaragua and Costa Rica have not. In Costa Rica, civil society is very well organized, pressuring against CAFTA. Former Costa Rican President Rodrigo Carrasco explained to Nicaraguan deputies and civil society on Tuesday why DR CAFTA should be rejected.
Porque no es un tratado paritario.
Because it's not an equal treaty. An equal treaty is one that benefits both sides equally.
Ultimately, when DR CAFTA reaches plenary, the Sandinistas, even with their 38 deputies, do not have the votes to stop the ratification. Thousands protested against DR CAFTA last week in the streets of Managua. Last month, a regional appellate court in Masaya accepted an appeal against the signing of DR CAFTA and sent it on to the Supreme Court. The appeal asserts that the treaty would violate 17 articles of the Nicaraguan Constitution, making it illegal for the state to establish social, environmental, or utility regulations that would affect U.S. corporations. If the Supreme Court decides that the signing of DR CAFTA is unconstitutional, it would be a major victory for civil society in Nicaragua. For Free Speech Radio News from Managua, this is Nan McCurdy.
Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica stations WBAI in New York, KPFK in Los Angeles, and KPFA in Berkeley, and community radio station WMNF in Tampa, Florida. The newscast is produced by Monica Lopez and Simba Russo. Headlines editors are Randy Zimmerman and Nell Abram. DC editor is Mitch Jezerich. Our technical production team is Jade Paget-Seekins, Pauline Bartolone, Mick Millen, and Eric Klein. Special thanks to Transbay for web services. For archives of this or other newscasts or documentaries, visit our website, www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado.